And now, Cheap Heat.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time. Not wasting any time. We're starting off this episode of Cheap Heat in special fashion. I want to thank members of the wrestling media, the IWC, and Peckerheads Worldwide for gathering here today, because obviously we have an important statement from the man you'll hear from in just a second. He wants to address what happened last week. So without any further ado, I want to bring up to the podium Stat Guy Greg, a.k.a. Uptown Mal. Everyone here is Stat Guy Greg, Uptown Mal. Go ahead, sir.
Last week on the Cheap Heat podcast, I made some very controversial comments about the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. As you all know, I am a very passionate wrestling fan, and sometimes I allow my passion to overshadow the points that I'm trying to make. Last week, I made statements regarding Seth Rollins and Shawn Michaels that some would consider blasphemous. And in re-listening to my comments, I myself feel that I was out of line. So please allow me, if I may, the opportunity to clarify my comments and put to bed for the final time the truth regarding my position on Shawn Michaels. Have I stated, and do I believe that Shawn Michaels is overrated? Yes, I have. Have I also stated that Shawn Michaels is not in my top 10? Yes, I have. Do I believe that Shawn Michaels is a WWE legend, though? Yes, I do. I prefer to view Shawn Michaels' career in two eras, pre-98 and post-2002. Post-2002 Shawn Michaels, I consider to be one of the all-time greats. However, I cannot get over the fact that pre-1998 Shawn Michaels, I was just not a fan of the work pre-1998. And so, in viewing Shawn Michaels in totality...
What about the Iron Man match, SGG? What about the Iron Man match?
Shawn Michaels did have a few matches that I loved, but pre-1998, Shawn Michaels, you know, Iron Man match, ladder match.
That's right.
Those are great matches, but pre-1998, especially when you consider some of his earlier work in the Rockers and the AWA, I feel like his second act greatly overshadowed the first, and that his first act, dare I say it, brings down his average.
So, do you want to clarify what you actually said, though? I mean,
yes, okay. Yes, I am. I am going to clarify what I actually said.
All right.
The offending statements were actually in reference to Seth Rollins and the fact that I believe that Seth Rollins is on the path to having a greater career than Shawn Michaels. And I apologize to those of you who I've offended with this statement. And please allow me to state what I actually meant by that. I feel as if Seth Rollins, in the short amount of time that he has had in WWE, he has made a great impact. And in that same amount of time, Shawn Michaels' first 4 or 5 years, he did not make a similar impact. And it is a great compliment to Seth Rollins to be compared to Shawn Michaels. As Peter Rosenberg said, Shawn Michaels is a forefather to the Seth Rollins style. And so, while it came off as disrespect to Shawn Michaels, it was truly meant to be a great compliment to Seth Rollins that I feel that the trajectory of his career so far puts him in the conversation with a legend such as Shawn Michaels. And I do believe that
we don't even understand what you're clarifying anymore. We don't get it. What are you trying to say?
I'm trying to say what I didn't get the opportunity to say last week, which was that if, yes, as it states right now, does Seth Rollins belong in the conversation with Shawn Michaels? No. But if given the opportunity which Shawn Michaels had to have a 20-plus year career, I do believe that in 2037, we will be able to have a serious conversation about Seth Rollins' place among the all-time greats. But in 2017, I was simply out of line, and I apologize for the disrespect to the internet wrestling community, the WWE Universe, Peter Rosenberg, and most importantly, the Click, as Shawn Michaels calls his fans everywhere.
That's right. Wow, I'm really glad. Look, guys, no more. We're not going to take any questions right now. I think that Greg has spoken enough. You said a lot. You've repeated a lot. You at moments you dug the hole even worse. Then you cleared it out nicely, and I think now we can move on from this really difficult day.
A dark day in Cheap Heat.
A really dark day in Cheap Heat history. Was hard for a lot of people. There were threats to Greg's family and loved ones. He had to hire security for his family, not for him. He's Uptown Malcolm. He doesn't need any help. But now we can move on and move to a new day, if you will, and we can start by talking about the week that was in professional wrestling. SGG, homie, pull up. Greg has sent me some thorough, impressive notes today. Let me pull up these great notes from SGG. SGG, included in these notes, are there things that happened outside the ring?
I didn't notice anything too crazy that happened outside the ring this week.
All right,
it was a pretty slow news day outside the ring.
So let's just jump right into it. And by the way, I want to tell everyone a couple of interesting things. Number one, I'm in Los Angeles, California right now. I am my last day here. It's the second Greg and I are done here. We got to wrap up in like 43 minutes. So I have time to shower and make it to downstairs to Sports Nation. I'm going to do that real quick. I was able to do a day of Sports Nation. So, you know, I was able to justify my trip to the Dipperstein's 30th birthday, which for everyone wondering what the gift was.
It was Mage.
The gift was Mage. They want to know if it was Mage. First of all, I want to give a huge shout out to my man Bob, okay? Bob is Bob shoots video for Chance the Rapper. I met him for the second time the other day at Gov Ball. He is the biggest peckerhead in the business today. SGG, this man listens to every show, loves the show. And I just want to say, Bob, you're Mage. My wife loved you. She thought you were the sweetest human being ever. So I want to give a shout out to the Mage peckerhead of the day, Bob, with Chance the Rapper. Anyways, moving right along. I say that, I remember that because Bob asked me about what the gift was going to be. Shout out to Robert Pearson, our good friend Rob, who's designed a bunch of stuff already for the Cheap Heat peckerheads. He created an image, a Cheap Heat image for the ages. I can't describe it yet. I can't show it yet.
It's iconic.
An iconic image created by Rob, which I had framed and gave to Dipperstein. He absolutely loves it. And I'll just tell you this. There's a chance that by SummerSlam, there will be an item with this image on it. And we might have to save it for Mania. It's that iconic. I don't know. Maybe we just go with the things we had discussed already for SummerSlam and we save it for Mania. It's so iconic. But either way, Dipperstein's birthday was a hit. And then I am on the red eye tonight, coming straight to work, straight to the morning show, and immediately after the morning show to Stanford to do some Bring It to the Table. So I'm guessing there will be Bring It to the Table next Monday night if I'm going.
They already announced it.
Oh!
It's already announced.
My bad? I did not even know that. So, yes, going to do that tomorrow. I hit them with a topic list that I think is incredible. I really hope we hit a lot of it because
Is Seth versus Shawn on this topic list?
Seth versus Shawn is not on the topic list. I did not want to bury you any worse than you've already buried yourself, SGG. So I left.
Well, no, that would have killed me off.
Oh, yeah. The character's finished at that point. So, no. But we'll start off with one of the things that was on that topic list. And that is what is going on with Sasha Banks. Of course, Rich Swann and Sasha Banks get the win over Noam Dar and Alicia Fox. But it does not change the fact. I mean, there's two ways of looking at it, as we talked about. I mean, yes, there was only room for two women's matches, essentially, one and a half women's matches on the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. And Sasha was on the card, so you can look at that as good news. But as a bunch of people in our Jew World Order group said, you know, the second they sort of pair you off in a random relationship, is it the beginning of the end, SGG? Not permanently. But is this going to be like some dark hole that Sasha Banks goes into for a while? Or was this just, we don't have anything for her in the main picture right now, so it's just a quick thing, we'll move her away from it, and then we'll move her back. I mean, let's be clear. The early indication is after Monday's Raw that Alexa Bliss is going to move on to something with Nia Jax, not Sasha Banks. So, SGG, what's your take? I mean, do you see this as ultimately an indicator that Sasha is not in good standing?
Yes, and it's for the reasons I stated last week, along with just, you know, Zack Ryder immediately jumps to mind. He was hot. He built his own fan base, and they threw him in a romantic storyline with Eve Torres, and that was as hot as he's been in years. And like I said, if it was meant to boost 205 Live's profile, they could have done that with any number of the male superstars who might even also be cruiserweights, but they didn't. They chose Sasha Banks for a reason, and I'm not necessarily sure that's for a good reason. I'm worried about Sasha.
I am a little bit as well. Let's tie that into the conversation about Alexa Bliss and Bayley. SGG, you were right. Bayley never used the kendo stick in the match. And Alexa has her way with Bayley. And another, you know, topic that I sent in, we'll see if it makes the show. I mean, was Bayley not ready? I mean, listen, when you watch the way that match played out, you can't help but think they wanted Alexa to have a decisive, brutal victory over Bayley. Then she was off TV the next night. I don't think there's anywhere to go in the immediate with Alexa Bliss and Bayley after such a decisive win. It can play into a longer story, but I just wonder, we were sitting there worrying about Sasha. I'm also worried about Bayley because I love Bayley. I think that her character has a lot of upside to it. I don't think in ring she was quite all the way there, but she will be at one point. I think she's very talented. I just think there was something not quite Monday Night Raw about her style. But just like we're kind of worried about Sasha Banks, SGG, are you also worried about Bayley?
Yes, and the reason why is because I don't think they've been able to tell her story right on Monday Night Raw. I mean, we loved her in NXT because she was the ultimate underdog, but then she didn't really get to fit into that role yet on the main roster. And so was she ready in terms of her own preparedness and her own ring work? I think so, despite her mic skills sometimes leaving something to be desired. But was she ready from a character development standpoint? I don't think so at all. And I think that's the problem.
Yeah, we'll see how this plays out. I mean, I don't know. You know, when you have her have that bad loss, it gives you the option of kind of pulling her off TV for a week and thinking about it. And then they decided to jump right into Nia Jax, which, you know, is interesting because Nia was just complaining about not being used the week before. But also, that's a story that could use a little bit more time to play out. But we'll see. Certainly not a great spot. Now, here's the one thought, though. You can have Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax go, and if you put Bayley and Sasha together right now, I think, have Sasha turn on Bayley and finally turn heel on her. I think what that will do is elevate both of them, and I think together they'll both look mage. So if you want to keep Alexa Bliss with Nia Jax for the title picture, this is actually a great opportunity. You can go from having a bad spot where a couple of your superstars look bad to you can have Alexa Bliss and Nia looking mage in the title picture, and just below that, Sasha and Bayley having a feud that would end up being huge. So maybe they take it as an opportunity to put them together, you know, like next week, Sasha goes and approaches Bayley and tries to talk to her about, you know, getting her to feel better, blah, 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 and then ultimately turns on her. And then before you know it, this thing that was a problem is ultimately looking better, but we'll see. I really enjoyed the story that Neville and Austin Aries told in the ring. I thought that when people were commenting on the pay-per-view, a lot of them were taking for granted how good that match was. What was your thought, SGG?
Oh, yeah, I agree. And I wasn't expecting to be anything but pleased with the Neville and Austin Aries match. So I don't understand how anybody could have anything negative to say about it. I mean, they deliver every time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, by the way, what was your overall review of the pay-per-view?
I really enjoyed the pay-per-view, and I enjoyed the following Raw as well. I don't know what everybody else has to say about it, but I mean, that main event was strong. The Miz looked good in the ring. That women's match was brutal, like you said. I enjoyed the finish on the cage match, the tag team title match. So, I don't know. For me, that was a good show.
I thought it was a very good show as well. By the way, I just received a text message from Lee Brian Campbell, who says he just caught up with last week's podcast. Finally caught up on my backlog of podcasts and heard the SGG slander and blasphemy on HBK. Not really sure how to move forward from here. This is worse than the time Hogan testified against Vince. Greg is the new stat guy George, as in Dr. George Zahorian. He just set wrestling back by decades. This makes Harley Race at number 5 suddenly sound plausible. Thank you for saying to him what needed to be said. Wow.
Wow. Unbelievable.
You're a heat magnet. It's unbelievable. I agree.
The only thing that I'm offended by that.
Yeah.
Is I had Harley Race at 4. So if the Brian Campbell is going to slander my name, he needs to get that right.
I know. By the way, get well wishes, of course, to your father, Harley Race.
Yes.
When I saw that Harley wasn't doing well, the first thing I thought of was, how is SGG doing?
Yeah, I mean, you hate for him to have to get his proper respect this way, but definitely a top 10 wrestler of all time.
We know how you feel. I just thought that this pay-per-view on paper was pretty trash. Like, I did not have high hopes for Extreme Rules at all. And when it was all said and done, and people thought I was a shill, of course, but that's all anyone ever thinks anymore. People were all coming for me because I said it was great, but let's be honest. The Cruiserweight match was great. I thought the Steel Cage match was really enjoyable. I thought the Miz and Ambrose was really enjoyable. And I thought the 5-Way was awesome. So that's 4 great matches. The women's match was not great. The mixed tag match, no one cared. But overall, for what was a pay-per-view that on paper was pretty weak, it turned out to be pretty good. Now, let's get to the criticism that I think is totally reasonable, which is that Extreme Rules was a good pay-per-view. Here's how I think you describe it. Extreme Rules was a really good pay-per-view. What it was not was extreme. Now,
yeah,
that's a reasonable conversation to have, because I will tell you, it was not extreme. In fact, there's nothing particularly extreme about a submission match. It's kind of traditional more than anything. And then the rule in the Intercontinental match between The Miz and Dean Ambrose.
Exact opposite of extreme.
It was the opposite of extreme. It specifically made the match less extreme. I did not understand. So, you know, the kendo stick on a pole match, okay, that was somewhat extreme. The steel cage match didn't have much that was extreme about it. And let's be honest, like over the years, we don't see steel cage matches that often, but I don't think of them as extreme necessarily. Like, unless something extreme is happening, or, you know, they're surrounding it with barbed wire, or there's something
right.
else that
without blood, without any type of blood, it's really hard to justify that as being extreme or even violent inherently, like it used to be.
Yeah, it's just not. It's not what it used to be. So that I totally do agree with the assessment that Extreme Rules was not extreme. I totally am with that. I totally understand it. However, that doesn't mean it wasn't a good pay-per-view. And I think that's something people – I think to me that's the difference. I thought it pushed forward a storyline, several storylines in an interesting way. Most notably, though, the five-way. I mean, listen.
Yes.
Because let's just talk about a couple other things before we get to that, because there's so much to unpack there. But like, Greg, The Miz gets the title back from Ambrose. I thought the finish of the match was cool. I enjoyed the match. But then on Monday, what we continued to get was more Ambrose and Miz. And like, how many total months have those guys been up against each other?
It's been all year, to be honest. Save for a little bit of time when Baron Corbin went after the Intercontinental Championship and The Miz focused his sights on John Cena. But besides that, it's basically been all year, and it would have been all year. I remember reading that the storyline going into WrestleMania that ended up being John Cena and Nikki Bella was originally planned for Renee Young and Dean Ambrose. So we really would – if you're tired of them now and they took that little break for WrestleMania season, you would have really been over seeing these Miz and Dean Ambrose matches if they went
so,
that way.
So that's the hard part for me is that I like the idea of the promo on Monday where Miz was really paranoid, although I thought they rushed it. Like, after he beat up the guy dressed up as the bear, like, that was funny. But then I think it should have been more gradual instead of he just started attacking everything right and left. But I like it, except for the fact that, like, I just don't know that I can commit to caring more about Dean and The Miz and the IC title. I don't know. Like, I just don't. I mean, I love The Miz's work right now. I love Maurice being around. It just feels like those guys got to move away from each other and go somewhere else meaningful, but I don't know where that is.
Well, I mean, sky's the limit for The Miz, right? He's the champion, so that opens up a lot of opportunities, but for Dean Ambrose is you know, that's where the question is. What does that mean as far as him being able to do something meaningful? What will that look like?
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. Very good point. Oh, hold on. My wrestling guy just sent me something. Very important. You know, it's very important when I hear from Ted at Wrestling for Sale. You know, it's very important. I went out and saw him yesterday. You know what I got from him yesterday?
What's that?
I got a mint condition Dungeon of Doom shirt. I got three.
Where does he find this stuff? That's what I want to know.
He finds it everywhere. He has a system in
it's
place.
It's like he scours the earth.
Yeah, he really does. I got Dungeon of Doom. I finally got the WrestleMania 18 Rock Hogan shirt with them both on the shirt staring at each other.
Ooh.
The icon versus icon. Granted, you know, it's Hogan, so I can't wear it yet, but you gotta.
I know, I was just thinking about that, too. Like, that was a great match, but can I appreciate it now that I know what Hogan really thinks about me? I don't know. I don't know if I'm over it yet.
Hey, but The Rock went over. Remember?
Yeah.
The black man got a win that day.
That day.
That day. So, I got that one. I'll put that on ice for a little while. And then I got the shirt that I'm likely going to be wearing on Bring It to the Table this week, which is just like the best looking DDP shirt. Like, I have DDP shirts, but this one is so dope. It just says DDP over a diamond. It's just awesome. Just a very plain, awesome DDP-er. All right, SGG. Let's move on a little bit more. Let's talk about the five-way. Break it down. Give me your thoughts on the five-way. I mean, obviously, you were upset because Roman Reigns finally did not go over in a pay-per-view match. And don't worry. It was obviously made up for the next day with the obligatory clean win in the middle of the ring to start Raw. Lest you think there was going to be a chance that Roman would lose two nights in a row. No chance. Don't worry.
It's his yard. Not in his yard.
No. They had to start off Raw right away. Boom. 1, 2, 3. Great match with Bray, which I enjoyed. But yeah, tell me what you thought about the Fatal 5-Way.
I thought it was incredible. I really enjoyed all the chaos, especially towards the end. And, you know, hats off to all those guys. Like, just every move was crisp. But even, like, their sell jobs, you know, for a little bit I thought Seth Rollins hurt his knee again after he hit that frog splash on Bray on the table and immediately grabbed his knee. And just, like, little things like that, you know. Even that botch when Finn kicked Roman in the mouth. I'm sure it hurt, but it looked beautiful just to watch him go down like that. And to see Samoa Joe come away with the clean win. My only gripe with the match, and I guess going forward is going to be with the Coquina Clutch in general, is that the refs don't do the 3 count. You know, like when they raise the arm and they drop it.
Yeah, I know.
They don't do it 3 times and then call for the bell. They go right for the bell. And it's like, you gotta, that's one of the little things that I missed that was so old school and very well done back in the day, especially when the babyface was about to make that comeback. And they need to bring that back for the Coquina Clutch.
That's a very good point. I wonder why it's that for this. You know what I'm saying?
I think it helps with the realism,
though. Why is it
going
to sleep situation and not considered like a sleeper hold?
Yeah, I guess because they wanted to have that legitimacy, you know? Like, they might be moving away from... I mean, this is the reality era, so I guess the only thing that makes sense is they wanted to have that legitimacy and that... In an MMA match, they won't do the 3 count thing. Like, they'll look, and if the guy is asleep, they'll call the match, and they want the refs to kind of emulate that. But this doesn't have to be MMA. We don't, you know, we all understand what's happening.
Now, what did you think about the next night putting this little alliance between Bray and Joe?
I like that alliance, man. I like it a lot. I feel like Bray does need somebody because I don't buy him as a cult leader with no cult. But as far as Samoa Joe is concerned, I am really excited about where he's gonna go with Brock Lesnar. I think that the eventual match that they have, if we get a Brock that wants to work and take risks and not the Brock that was accused of being lazy by Dean Ambrose, I think we're in for a really good match because they match up very well together, believe it or not.
Now, a lot of people have the feeling that, like, I think there are people out there who don't like the idea of this match because they feel it's simply Joe being fed to Brock.
Well, yeah, if it's going to be Joe being fed to Brock, then... you can add me to the list of people who don't want to see this match. But at the same time, there's no reason that Joe should just simply be fed to Brock. Even if Joe takes a loss, it's Samoa Joe. He's the destroyer. He was chosen by Triple H. He's not one of these people who like lined up to challenge the Beast on their own accord. So... he needs to show strength in this match. Otherwise, it's a waste.
I do want to say something, though. This is going to get me a little bit of heat, but it has to be said. I was making fun of, to Dipperstein, you know, the obligatory Roman Monday Night Raw win over Bray. But the bottom line is, you have to take a moment to understand the protection of Roman. Like, even though it's annoying and it backfires with the smarky smarks, ultimately, you have to appreciate why it happens. Like, you have to have people who don't lose a lot. Like, this is so basic. I know what I'm saying, like, sounds really obvious. But, like, we always sit here and we're like, oh, so-and-so wins every time, or this, that. Think about the people who do have losses occasionally when it makes sense. And think about how it affected them. Think about how losses have sort of affected Bray Wyatt, right?
Like, yeah, well, Bray, I mean, some of those losses didn't make any sense, though.
What'd you say?
I said some of those losses didn't make any sense, though. Like, there was no reason that the year after the Undertaker's streak is broken, that Bray Wyatt should not have been able to beat him at WrestleMania 31, I think. Same with John Cena at WrestleMania 30. Those losses didn't make sense.
No, the Mania
losses for sure don't make sense.
I agree with you. There are some that just didn't make sense. And it lets you it makes you understand why, you know, there's such an impact to ensuring people like not having losses like that. Like, Roman is literally protected to the point that there's never a chance that Roman's gonna have a loss that we look back on and says that doesn't make sense. That's not gonna happen. If Roman loses, it will only be in a way that forever you're like, well, yeah, that one made sense. Now, I'm not saying that doesn't make it annoying from a viewer standpoint. You're like, oh my gosh, this guy always wins. But like, you need to have a top guy. And whether y'all like it or not, although I think ultimately we're the ones who decided it, Roman is that guy. He is. It's clear now. It's been 2 years of it. He is that guy. So if you're that guy, there are certain things that are going to happen. You cannot have him just periodically lose. When was that ever the case? Hogan, Warrior, Savage, like the guys who ran the place, Brett, Shawn, how often did they lose? Not very often. That's just the nature of the beast. And we all as kids, we expected them to not really ever lose. And if they lost, they were cheated. And they got their revenge. It's pretty basic, guys. I don't know why we freak out about it. Like, it doesn't make sense. I mean, you have to protect the guy who you're going to sell his merch, and he's in there every single day. That's just what it is.
Yeah, and I just want to back up, too, about something that you said about Roman, because I mentioned this on the podcast, too. It was the fans who chose him, because if you remember, in the Shield days, there was a point when each member was positioned as the leader, but nobody was outright chosen as the leader. And just before they broke up, everybody was all about Roman. Like, I remember specifically a match where CM Punk came out and he said that he was going to fight any one of the Shield members as long as it was just the one, so they could decide amongst themselves. And before any of them could step up to face him, the crowd chanted for Roman. And that wasn't like a one-off thing. That would happen night after night after night. So this idea now that he was being shoved down our throats or this or that, I don't think is the case. I think it's the other way around. I think that we shoved him down their throats.
Yeah, they just gave it right back.
Yeah, and they're making money off of it. So it's a win-win for everybody. And if you don't like it now, then you're lying to yourself.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, he doesn't have to be your favorite. It's fine if you don't love Roman Reigns. I don't expect everyone to be like, oh, he's my favorite. Like, I don't, you know, he's not my favorite dude in WWE. I'm not SGG, but I certainly get it, and I certainly enjoy his pay-per-view work. I mean, he did it again. I mean, the Fatal 5-Way was pretty awesome. So, all right, that gets us moving forward now. We know that we'll see Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar at Great Balls of Fire, which is the next time I'll be coming your way at a WWE kickoff show for Great Balls of Fire. Now, it appears we have this little bit of alliance between Samoa Joe and Bray, which I find interesting. Now, where do you think this puts us in terms of the SummerSlam picture?
Where do I think?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Do you think this, because if they see something they really like with Joe Is there a chance it continues forward and Joe and Brock have a match at SummerSlam, or is that almost impossible? And we're looking at maybe a triple threat involving Roman or something of that sort, because Roman has to be involved, obviously, in the main event at SummerSlam.
Well, see, I really don't know. There's a lot of moving parts, and there's a huge missing part. Braun Strowman, we don't know where he is as far as his injury. I don't have any updates. And
there are rumors out there that his injury is not as bad as advertised and that he could show up for SummerSlam.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've heard those same rumors, but if those rumors are true, then you still have to beg the question of where do you put him, you know, at SummerSlam? Is he going to forget about the fact that Roman's the guy that put him on the shelf and then go for the Universal Championship? If he does that, who is the Universal Champion? If Roman's going for the Universal Championship and then it becomes Braun and Roman and somebody else for the Universal Championship, you still have to figure out what's going to happen to that title. Is it going to be Brock or Joe? And whether you take it off of Brock or not, what does he do at SummerSlam? Because he's another person that you also have to have at SummerSlam.
That's a very good point. Also, okay, we all, it's a good spot to move. We also got to move on and get to a little bit of SmackDown talk, because the modern day Maharaja, Jinder, that's right, Jinder Mahal, aka, as the internet haters call him, Juicy Jinder. Just kidding, I've never heard that before, but I wouldn't be surprised if they said it. He comes out, and was that the, by the way, I watched out of order. Like, I'm on the West Coast, and I was out yesterday, so I was waiting for it to come up on Hulu. The full episode didn't come up, so all I've watched is the highlight version. Jinder started the show. Well, that's how the show started, right?
No, that is not how the show started.
Oh, the show started with the women.
Yes.
So what was that, the top of hour two?
A beautiful white – it might have been the top of hour two, but can we talk about that briefcase for a second for the for Mrs. Money in the Bank?
You love it.
I do love it. I do. I was worried that it would be pink, but I like how much it complements the other women's championships.
That is very nice. I didn't even think about that. So wait, they started with all the women, and will you tell me what happened with the Lana? How did Lana come back to TV?
First, I want to thank Lana for exposing the male Roman Reigns haters as hypocrites. And I'm gonna get to that in a second, just after I've explained to you her reintroduction. So the women in the Money in the Bank match are in the ring. Shane brings down the case, and it's gorgeous. The reveal is gorgeous. And then Naomi comes down, and she complains that she's not in the match, and she wishes that she had something to do. And that's when Lana's music hits, and Lana comes down to the ring, and Lana requests a SmackDown Women's Championship match. And rightfully so. Naomi told her that basically she doesn't deserve it because she hasn't beaten anybody and she needs to prove herself. And I brought up the male Roman Reigns haters because I just found it so interesting that a big part of their critique is that Roman Reigns supposedly he can't wrestle and that the women in the audience only cheer him because he's good looking. And whether that's true or not, some of those same men, I guarantee you, were cheering wildly for Lana on Tuesday's edition of SmackDown. And that's like the height of hypocrisy to me, because she hasn't wrestled the match either, and you're all on your feet popping for her like she's Triple H or somebody.
I didn't ever think about it like this, Greg. You're calling this the height of hypocrisy.
Yes.
Scorching hot take from SGG.
Yes.
So,
and especially because it's obvious that they're only cheering her for her looks.
How dare you?
She hasn't wrestled a match. She hasn't done anything.
What do we think she's like in the ring, by the way? Do we know?
I I don't know, but I mean, I think it is telling that she was kept out of the ring for so long. So maybe she's improved from what she, from where she's been, but I don't think it was good that we haven't seen her yet.
I'll tell you what, I am nervous about this match for Naomi's title.
You think they're gonna take it off of Naomi and put it on?
Doesn't it seem like what's the point of having her appear in her debut on a pay-per-view to just like have her be trash and get beat? And like, she's obviously not going to be that great. Like, she's not going to be able to work a true match with Naomi, I wouldn't think. So
yeah, I don't think so either.
It only feels like there's two ways it can go: her completely jobbing to Naomi, or her somehow stealing a win.
Yeah, I mean, she has to completely job to Naomi, if you ask me. And you bringing up the fact that she basically made her debut and is going straight into the title picture reminds me of even more hypocrisy, because when this was Jinder Mahal, everybody was up in arms. Nobody gives a damn that Lana's immediately in the women's title picture. Like, where are the critics? Where are the critics? At least keep it consistent.
But you know what it is, Greg? These so-called critics don't respect the women's division enough to care. They say they do. They pretend. But really, ultimately, let's just be real about it. A lot of these supposed fans of the women's division, they were so loud when Sasha and Charlotte were doing what they did, and when Bayley was first coming up and these NXT moments were happening. But right now, that it's not as in vogue, and it's a little bit, the women's division's a little bit more lost, I think a lot of those people are quiet and don't really care. That's how I feel.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
see, I'm a real one. I'm the father of the Divas Revolution. We know that. You know, the women's revolution started right here. I've been a fan since before the Charlotte and Sasha era. A lot of fans only showed up then, and I just find them to be disinterested now. They may like Alexa Bliss because they, you know, people are so widely enjoying her sort of promo work and her general like character. But I don't know how much they're actually paying attention and caring about what the product is.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go ahead and say it might not be that as much, which is disappointing because the women's roster has a lot of women on it that can go and churn out entertaining matches, and not just the ones that I don't want to say flavor of the month, but you know, the ones that we deem are hot right now, you know, like, no pun intended, but they, like, a lot of the women can go.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've had enough of the welcoming committee and Naomi, Becky, and Charlotte. I don't know how much we can do that.
I don't know what it's missing, but it needs something, and not just Ellsworth.
No. Ellsworth is not saving anything. I have news for you right now. Love you, Ellsworth, but no. How was AJ and Dolph, two of the best wrestlers in the world, going at it?
I want to see more. I'm not going to lie. And I don't know if that's because I have, like, such high expectations for the both of them that I felt like they could deliver a classic five-star match. But I feel like it was good. It was entertaining. But I don't know. I want to see a match that can almost be like a best-of match. You know what I mean? Like a five-star classic match that we'll be talking about forever. And maybe that's just the nature of SmackDown, that they're not going to give that away on a Tuesday.
Well, I mean, right now AJ and Dolph doesn't mean anything. I don't know if there's an indication of, do we know exactly where AJ is going to go right now? Or do we think he's going to be, do you think we're going to be in a period now where AJ and Shinsuke are just kind of like two ships in the night, and we're not going to quite see them come together, because ultimately that's what our goal is, to get there?
I mean, I said I want to see them at WrestleMania. So if we can keep them apart as two ships in the night for now, I am going to be completely okay with that, because I'd rather see them stay separated for now, and then around November, December, they start crossing paths, and then they go straight into a program for Mania. That's my preferred.
Yeah, I think that's what everyone wants. I mean, that's – now, what do you think about – we talked about the modern-day Maharaja, the champion, Jinder Mahal. What are your thoughts on a John Cena return, which is coming up soon? July 4th.
July 4th, to be exact.
July 4th. Seems like a good time for the All-American Hero to come back and pick a fight with Jinder Mahal, no?
It does. I would hate for it to have to be about America versus the foreigner, but it's almost seems like blatantly obvious that that's where it's going to end up.
I'm trying to not let the current state of the world, you know, affect that. Like, it's always been a silly thing in wrestling. I think 98% of the fan base knows it's tongue in cheek, and the USA thing is like pretty tongue in cheek. So I'm trying to not let the current administration affect that being a silly, fun thing to do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, as long as Cena doesn't come out in a Make America Great Again hat, I feel like...
I can. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and guarantee that doesn't happen.
I feel like he'll be able to make it enjoyable, even though that, like, that air of...
No, you know what he would do, though? Cena would end up being saying that he loves India, and that Jinder Mahal doesn't really represent India.
That's fair. That's a fair way to go. And maybe, you know, I'd much more appreciate that than Cena going like USA versus India.
Yeah, I don't. You know what I mean? They couldn't do that though, considering how much this is supposedly about like expansion into India. They're not going to have John Cena bury India. I just don't see that happening.
Is John Cena off learning Punjabi? Do we know?
Or you Hindi? Never know. He may come back and speak better Punjabi than Jinder Mahal.
I'd be cool with that.
But listen, I wouldn't get over. I know what you're saying, but like if you start trying to apply modern day ethics and concerns to every wrestling storyline, you kind of rule out like a lot of the basic sort of devices of wrestling.
All I'm saying is, right, I don't mind the foreign menace type of storyline, but what Jinder's saying isn't that menacing. He's saying you people hate me because I look different and America's not really big on diversity. That's not really menacing or threatening. That's almost kind of true.
Well, yeah, but when you say anything with the tone in which he says it, it doesn't really matter what he says.
That's fair.
I mean, listen, he used Gandhi to get heat. He's like, as the great fair. Mahatma Gandhi said, and people started booing. It's like, what are you going to reference, Mother Teresa? I mean, that's not a heat magnet, but he makes it that because I think he has legit heat, which I do enjoy. So I'm with you. Is that what you expect, though? Do you expect it to be Cena and Jinder? You expect Jinder to somehow win again at Money in the Bank, and then do you expect it to be Cena and Jinder at SummerSlam?
Battleground is between Money in the Bank and SummerSlam. But I do expect Jinder to hold on to the championship just because he's getting better every week. So it doesn't make sense. Like, even if they were experimenting with Jinder, the experiment is working and you just got to keep riding that wave until it stops working. And hopefully he can make it to SummerSlam in August with the championship.
I expect that he will. I mean, we'll see. But by the way, so they apparently during the kickoff show made reference to LeVar Ball and Titus O'Neil. Did you hear that?
I did not. But I wouldn't surprise me, though.
Yep. Supposedly there was...
You're major around those parts.
Supposedly there was multiple references to that. And then Kalisto goes ahead and beats Apollo Crews and Titus O'Neil. They did not listen to me when it came to not letting Titus O'Neil wrestle.
Yeah, that was the most made suggestion. Hopefully they ease into it. Well, that would be amazing.
He should come out next week and say, like, listen, that's not happening anymore. I don't wrestle. I'm the Titus brand, okay? I'm all about the brand and putting on other talent. I'm retiring from the ring. Like, that's what I think. I don't like him. Also, what is the point of the back and forth? Like, I just, man, Apollo Crews is really talented. If this is ever going to mean anything, it's time to make it start meaning something. Like, you have 3 hours. There's plenty of time to make someone have a little bit of meaning. And I'm ready to see that with Apollo Crews. I mean, everyone says he's a great guy, who's incredibly athletic, of course, but so far the character just doesn't mean anything. I would rather have him buy into the Titus brand and become a real jerk than him sort of be like still this good guy who like is kind of resistant to Titus. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I thought we were gonna get that when he attacked Enzo for taking that selfie, but, you know, and maybe it's still not far off, but.
Which reminds me, okay, before we wrap up, how do you feel about the Enzo and Kaz thing, and is this absolutely going towards a breakup between them?
I'll be shocked if it doesn't go towards a breakup, but I like that it's still mysterious, though. Like, I thought it was the revival at first, and I thought it was Kaz, but then Big Cass ends up laid out, and now I still kind of think it's Cass, but I don't know. And whose gold chain did he have? I like that I have more questions than answers.
Yeah, what was the gold chain thing? That was weird, right?
It was. I don't know. I don't know what that was about, but I like that I don't know. I like that I don't have the answers, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they explain that in the coming weeks.
Yeah,
but it was very strange.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's really cool that there's actually mystery to it. I think that makes it dope. I got to wrap up today, SGG, because I got to go to do more work, but I wanted to make sure we got an episode in. Also, guys, programming alert. This is exciting for the people. I am going to be a guest this week on the Masked Man show on
Woo!
The Ringer. Oh, yes. So the maker of shoes and the Prince of Peckerheads, a.k.a. Mage, a.k.a. Sweet, Sweet Peter Rosenberg, coming together in L.A. We're recording later today. So you get two this week. You get this, and then you also get a reunion to the original foundation of Cheap Heat, me and Shoemaker. Thank you. Thank you. Greg, great apology today. Do you have any stats?
No stats.
Perfect. No stats, Greg. And AKA Uptown Malcolm. Oh no, we're not going the whole show. We got to play it one more time. We got to at least hit you once, Greg. You deserve it. We didn't start it with the right vibe. I think it's appropriate we hit your music one time. Do you mind?
No, I do not. Not at all.
Wait, who is that? Oh my God. Oh my God. It's that guy. No. That's Uptown Malcolm. That is Uptown Malcolm. Oh, he loves delicious chicken. Now, Dipper Scene is concerned we cannot put I Like Delicious Chicken on the shirt because it's too racist. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I'm torn because...
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, I do like delicious chicken, but I don't want... Like, you know, I don't want a random person to come up to me just, like, assuming that I like delicious chicken, you know? So it's...
But you do. It's who
I do.
It's who Uptown Malcolm is.
Don't assume. Don't put that on me. Let that be my gift to the world. You know.
Well, but that's the thing. But that's what makes it appropriate because the shirt says "I like delicious chicken." It's you telling the world.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can see Dipper's concern though.
I have the same concern, but it's all something to discuss. Hey, SGG, do me a favor. Stay mage.
Always.
And we'll talk to you guys next week. Don't forget to watch Bring It to the Table next Monday after Raw. Later, buddy.
Uptown.